Because the natural tendency for an entrepreneur, I've noticed, is that you think you can do everything yourself, and, right. and you think you can do everything better yourself.
This is Chris Reynolds, and welcome to the Entrepreneur House podcast. The Entrepreneur House is a business accelerator for entrepreneurs, creating events and retreats all over the world. Picture yourself with other high-level entrepreneurs in the northern mountains of Thailand, October 26, 2017. It will be full of masterminds, workshops, advisors, like-minded entrepreneurs, and of course, some fun adventure. If you're ready to take your business to the next level with other successful entrepreneurs, be sure to contact us ASAP at theentrepreneurhouse.com. And now, on to today's episode. The idea of setting up and running a business seems pretty self-explanatory and really simple. You just find a product or service and give it to people. Why then do 90% of businesses fail? On today's episode, we welcome Philip Bordeaux, founder of HammockUniverse.com. Philip has been selling hammocks online since 2001 and is now based in Chiang Mai, Thailand. Throughout the show, Philip and I discuss the growth of his business over the past 16 years. We go into depth about his automation and outsourcing process, and towards the end of the show, we get into the exact reason why 90% of businesses fail. There is a growth process in entrepreneurship that isn't talked about enough and most of the time very difficult to go through. Philip shares what worked and what didn't work going through this process and how he came out on the other end with an incredible business and an incredible experience. Without further ado, you guys, let's welcome Philip to the show. Welcome, Philip, to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. And you're reporting live from Chiang Mai?
Live from Chiang Mai, as I was mentioning you in the pre-intro here with a beautiful view of Doi Suthep National Park.
I want to get into your story, Philip, and learn more about Hammock Universe. So for the listeners, Philip's running an online e-commerce site selling hammocks and hammock accessories and doing pretty well with it. You've been doing it since 2001, is that right?
Yeah, we've been doing it since 2001. So the backstory is that's a long time. You're running a business. But for a lot of those years, it was kind of a fun side project for me. I was working in a traditional office in a 9-to-5 job, and the business was just something I did for fun. Eventually we got serious about it. I brought in a business partner, and we just decided, hey, we want to make this, like, we want to do this full time.
Yeah,
we didn't want to do the office life anymore, and it just kind of went from there.
What were you doing before Hammock Universe?
Believe it or not, I was, well, before Hammock Universe or during Hammock Universe?
Both.
Yeah, wow, before Hammock Universe. That's a long time ago. It was my first proper business. So in terms of entrepreneurship, that, you know, I worked some regular office jobs back in Ottawa, the city I'm from, but that was my first proper business. Mm-hmm. And during Hammock Universe, during those years, I was working in a political office.
Oh, wow.
For a politician. So I was, you know, deep into the world of politics, and I was running a business on the side at the same time. So these two things definitely stimulated different parts of my brain. Mm-hmm. And there was one point where I knew that you know, entrepreneurship was for me, that my personality lent itself well to it. And that's when, you know, I brought in a business partner, and we really decided to make a go of it.
So you started Hammock Universe in 2001, or started selling hammocks in 2001. How long until you brought your business partner in?
Geez, I'm terrible with dates, but it must have been around 2000. Must have been about 5 years ago.
Okay.
I would say it was about 5 years ago.
When did you realize that you could leave the political world, quit the 9-to-5, and go full time with the business?
We had an opening, I guess. The way it works in politics is obviously they only have a few years in office, and they have to decide whether they're going to run again. And our situation, you know, our boss decided that was it. He wasn't going to run again. So my business partner, who worked in the same office as me, we both saw an opening there, because we had been there for long enough that we had a nice severance package in that condition, that our boss was not going to run again. And so we were basically out of a job. And at the same time, the business was growing very quickly at that stage. And we knew that it was possible. So it was sort of the perfect window that we just jumped through at that point.
You and I met in Chiang Mai last fall. And
at the veranda, right?
Yeah. Here's why I think this is a cool combination, because you seem such like a just chill, cool guy that you could find on the beach in Thailand or find chilling in a small town in Thailand. And you sell hammocks. Like, how perfect is that? Like, it just goes hand in hand with each other.
It kind of sounds like the dream. I sell hammocks and everything is chilled out. But yeah. I'm sure, as you know, Chris, there's no easy business out there. And for sure, it comes with its share of issues and problems and stress and all the rest of it. But it is kind of a fun thing to sell. I always tell people it's an easy sell to sell a hammock. It is not a tough sell. I don't have to be a salesman, you know. Yeah. Everybody wants a hammock.
That's a good question. Like, because it is an easy sale, how did you grow the sales side of your business?
There's so many ways. But generally what we did it was we didn't have one. We did not have an Oprah Winfrey moment where, well, some superstar mentions the name of our business and everything goes through the roof. That would have been nice. But what we did is just organically, over time, through referrals, customers telling their neighbors, their families about it, and a lot of SEO, a lot of organic SEO. We also do a lot of, we've done Google AdWords, you know, forever. Google AdWords is a big part of how we generate traffic. Mm-hmm. Through those mediums, we just grew the business, and you know, eventually the business gets to the point where the active, your active customer base, the mail list is of a certain size, and then that becomes quite easy to leverage once you've got a customer that has made one successful transaction with your business, and that confidence has been established, and you can really, that customer becomes extremely valuable. They will buy again. They will tell their neighbors about it. So it was a very organic process for us of just getting that customer list up to a certain point. Mm-hmm. and then using leveraging those existing customers for more business.
Did you ever think about, you started selling hammocks in 2001. Did you ever think about starting another business or selling something else?
I did. Yeah. On the personal side, so I run Hammock Universes with my business partner. Mm-hmm. And on the personal side, I have a different brand, which I run that as well. It's a constant balancing act where, I try to spend the right amount of time in the right amount of places. But we only have 24 hours in a day, so
right,
do our best.
So over the past 16 years or so since you've been selling hammocks, looking back, if there's anything major that you could do different, what would it be?
I have to give that one a little bit of thought. That's a pretty good question. What I would say is a lesson learned is, in business, I think in life and in business, you're constantly leveling up. Once you try something that has been scaring you for a long time in business, you make that realization, well, I should have done this a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I'd have to say is delegating more of the business, outsourcing more of the business, because the natural tendency for an entrepreneur, I've noticed, is that you think you can do everything yourself, and, right, and you think you can do everything better yourself. And so the big thing for me is thinking I could do everything better myself. And then once you outsource and realize, well, no, there's people out there that are way better than you are at these tasks, it opens up the whole world. And I think the most successful people understand that very well. And it took me too long, if I could be honest, to understand that part of business.
So I'd love to ask you more about this, because this is something I'm challenged with myself, and I'm actually reading the book Essentialism right now to kind of be better at this, because that mentality is so ingrained in my background and history that it's just like naturally comes up. Somebody mentions doing something and I'm like, oh yeah, I'll just put that on the list, no problem. And rarely do I think about, oh, why don't I outsource that for
sure,
for, you know, and it doesn't, like, it's like I have to remind myself. I have like a little bracelet on my wrist. It's my reminder to say, stop taking on so much stuff and outsource more stuff. So I'd love to learn more about your process of how you started to realize that, okay, I can't do so much, and how to find good people to outsource.
I guess it starts with simply having too much on your plate. As you mentioned, you're going to add some tasks to your list, and your list becomes, unmanageable. And checking 1 month later, you know, there's an item that's been there for a month, and it's kind of a wake up call. This is not getting done. At the same time, there's sections of the, there are big parts of the e-commerce ecosystem that you can never properly understand unless you sit down and focus on that every day of your life. So that would be a full-time job. And the perfect example for me was when Google AdWords first started, I was very much involved in keeping up to date on how the AdWords system was changing so that I can be on top of that game and optimize my bids and everything. And Google AdWords eventually became such a beast that became very, very difficult to do, because Google AdWords and pay-per-click advertising is just one component of the overall business that I had to run. So it was that realization that I'm never going to be the best at this unless I do this full time. Mm-hmm. So there must be somebody out there that does this full time and understands everything about this, you know, this part of business. It was that realization that it was just too big for me at some point. And I'd have to say the same thing with SEO. You can, there are guys that do, I'm sure you know many of them, Chris, that do SEO full time, and it's a full time job to stay on top of what works and what doesn't work. And that was another big component of the business, SEO. I knew I would never be, I could be good enough, but I would never be the best at SEO unless I just did that. So at that point, it starts making sense to outsource these parts of your business.
I'd like to chat more, Philip, about kind of the automation complex without compromising your customer service, so to speak. And so that's also something that, for me, like, I like to do sales calls. I like to make sure that customers are happy. I guess what I'm asking is, like, the mental shift for you from where you decided to outsource and automate and be comfortable with the quality of customer service that you were getting from that automation.
So, and you're right. This is a perfect example of certainly in my case, that I never thought anybody would be able to do customer service like I do. But that, again, that was demyth very quickly. I remember having a great conversation with another guy, another successful e-commerce guy down when I was down in Phuket. And he'd mentioned to me at that time, I was still doing all of the customer service, or a lot of the customer service. My business partner was doing a lot of it as well. And he mentioned that once he outsourced his customer service, he implemented a rating system where his customers could, you know, give it a rating on a 1 to 10 or whatever. And he had tested that when he did his own customer service, the rating that he got, and when he had outsourced his customer service, he was sure it was going to be a disaster. Mm-hmm. But you know what happened is the contrary.
Really?
He thought he built up his business, so he thought he was fantastic at customer service, and he probably was pretty good. But his deduction was that he was so busy with every other part of his business that he did not have time to put the proper focus, attention, and energy into responding to every email. Whereas the person or persons that he hired to do his customer service had all of since it was their only task, I mean, they had more energy to put into every single response and every single email. So they ended up doing a lot better than he did. That's actually been my experience to a certain point as well. I don't go in and check all of the customer interactions, but the times that I've had, I mean, the customer service people we have in place do as good, if not better, a job than I ever did.
So if you don't mind sharing, do you outsource to your home country, Canada, for your customer service, or do you use another
country? Don't. Yeah, we have. So our main customer service person is from the Philippines.
Okay.
And, you know, if you can, obviously it comes down to economics. For the cost of staff in the Philippines is just so much lower, and we've found that the quality of staff is just as high as if we were shopping for staff in, you know, Canada or the States or any Western country.
Yeah, that's great to know, because I think a lot of people might feel that, you know, a customer service department, people might feel more comfortable and happy with somebody from their own country. But it's great to know that, you know, you're using people from the Philippines and they're doing just as great of a job. And I think the Philippines too, let me see if you agree with this. The Philippines too, the culture there is kind of a customer service or make people happy mentality. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure, Chris. No? I don't know. Okay. I don't know enough about it. Like, I've never been to the Philippines. The only thing I can say is, in our case, the people that work for the Filipinos that work for Hammock Universe and the ones that work for my separate brand, in their specific situations, I'd say yes, they're very, very, very axed on making people happy. They're axed on making me happy to almost to a crazy point where I have to say, hey, slow down. Like, tell me what I don't want to hear as well.
How did you make those connections with your customer service department?
So the first one that was hired was my business partner sort of took that project on, and I'm pretty sure he found her through Upwork. So the main customer service person that works for my separate brand, I had referred to me through a friend, and he had already trained her with the Amazon system. So since she had already been trained in a lot of the systems I use, it just made sense for me to do an interview and to hire her. But the one for Hammock Universe, it was through Upwork.
How long would you say the training process took?
It's still going on.
Okay.
Like, it's constantly evolving and changing and ongoing. Mm-hmm. Even myself, like, you know, I don't have all of the systems. You get questions that surprise you even now. You know, there's some new questions. So you try to have all your processes in place. Well, if a customer requires this and that, well, this is how you're going to tackle the issue. But the fact is, there's new stuff comes along all the time. So it requires constant updating.
So I'll be a bit more specific. How long did it take you to train your customer service people till you were comfortable? And in your mind, you're like, okay, these people I can trust.
I would say it took about a month.
Okay.
It took about a month before they were comfortable on both the phone, the chat, and you know, all of the aspects of our business. Every business runs so differently. So for them to learn about our corporate, like our, I don't want to say corporate culture, but our business culture, our personalities and how we do things, I'd say about a month.
And what were some things that you did during that month with the person to gain the trust? I'm sure you're teaching like different steps, but like anything in specific that really stands out?
Well, again, on the Hammock Universe side, like, I can't get into too many specifics because my business partner was handling most of that.
Okay.
But what he did is he worked very closely with her in terms of monitoring her. He'd have her do some live chats, and I'm sure he was debriefing her after her first customer, you know, her customer responses, and hey, you know, I would have handled this a little bit different. I would have done it this way. And he did a lot of monitoring in terms of how she would respond. And then he was, you know, coaching her through how to improve on that.
Anything else that you'd like to share about growing a customer service department that you think is really valuable for listeners?
Well, not so much the specifics of how and this, but just the fact, I guess, the concept of doing it as quickly as humanly possible.
Yeah.
Because I did it for way too long, admittedly, and customer service sucks a lot of energy. It sucks a lot of time, a lot of energy. And what you want to be doing, obviously, as a business owner, is focusing on other parts of your business. So it is outsourceable. And I would, as I mentioned earlier, if I was to do things again, I would outsource customer service right away. First thing I outsource, for sure.
Is there anything else that you would outsource sooner in your business?
Is there anything else I would outsource sooner in my business?
Am I giving you hard questions?
No, it requires some thought. Probably not. The customer service can be outsourced right away, but the other parts of the business that I eventually outsourced, I had to do myself. It's a necessary step, I think, to be in the weeds as the business owner and to be doing everything yourself and to go through all the headaches and the pain of learning your business and every aspect of your business. And only, I think, after having gone through that for a certain period of time, are you in a position, to be able to properly outsource that. The fact is, if I had outsourced my pay-per-click advertising, just as an example, or my SEO before being aware of it and before having done a lot of it myself, then what would have prevented somebody from sandbagging me and sort of realizing very quickly that I don't know what I'm doing and doing their own thing, and how would I have monitored them and sort of built a relationship and helped them improve if I had been not aware at all of the system? You have to have a certain level of knowledge for the outsourcing, I think, to be to work.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, perfect sense. I'm curious, you've mentioned a few other things, but what are the main areas of your business that are completely outsourced?
So customer service is fully outsourced. Mm-hmm. All of the web design and development is outsourced, in the sense that I lead projects, but I have the ideas, but I kind of delegate all of that, all of the details to developers and designers.
Yeah.
PPC is fully outsourced on both the Amazon side and the Hammock Universe side. So all the pay-per-click is done by others. And that's it.
Well, I think it's an incredible business model. I think, would you duplicate it if you had to do it all over again?
You mean duplicate like the exact business that I'm involved in?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I would. It's a tough question to answer because, yeah. I've got a great life now, and I feel that you go through a certain period of suffering in any business that you're going to go up to a certain level. Yeah. And it's like, it's nice now because I've been through that suffering, and you emerge on the other side and you know a lot more than you did before. And things are good now. So I'm grateful that I did what I did. I don't know how much suffering would have been involved in a different kind of business. I'm sure it would have been I'm sure it would have been suffering, just different type of suffering. But I can't say I have any regrets about the way I did it. So I'm quite content at this stage. So if you ask me, would I do it again? Well, yes, I would do it again, because I'm at a place that where I'm quite content.
So if I asked you that question, it's your most – and I'm glad you brought this up, really, because it's not talked about enough, this period of suffering as entrepreneurs go through. It's your – lowest period of suffering, or your most strongest period of suffering, I guess that's a better way to say it. How would you answer that question? Would you still say that you would do it all over again?
You mean when I'm at my worst?
Yeah, when you were at your worst.
I would have probably said, to hell with it. I want to do something else. I'm sure that most entrepreneurs, if they say the contrary, are probably lying.
Yeah.
Every nice thing about being in Chiang Mai is you're surrounded by business people, and everybody's in the same boat. We all go through very, very difficult times with the businesses.
Yeah.
And it's a different kind of life, in that you're never – maybe some people have that where they can completely disconnect from the business, but when I'm at a social gathering and everybody's talking about a non-business subject, well, oftentimes I'm thinking about my business.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to switch off. And that said, you go through some tremendous lows and some tremendous highs. Come back on the suffering thing. A pet peeve of mine is when people, it seems to be quite prevalent on some of these, some I don't even, know if they're entrepreneurs, but people that are selling courses on these kinds of easy solutions to be successful in business. So mm-hmm. I follow these 5 steps, and you will be a millionaire like me, and look at my fantastic life in Thailand. Mm-hmm. You know, I get to hang out on beaches all day and this and that. And this is a lot of BS. Anyone that says these things can be a very good salesman, but there's a whole other side of climbing the entrepreneurship mountain. And I'm sure there's so many levels above where I'm at now. But there's a mountain to climb there, and it's not easy. There's going to be a lot of suffering. It's not for everybody. Some people give up, and there's a lot of bad days in there, not just good days.
Yeah.
So I feel people need to be honest about that.
I completely agree. In many ways, this path of entrepreneurship is kind of like baking a pie. You know, you're setting up your business, you're getting it ready, and then that period of suffering is when you're in the oven. And that can be quite a while until that pie comes out and it looks beautiful and it's delicious and tasty. But I like to ask you, since we're on the subject, most entrepreneurs do go through this process. What are some ways that you applied this specifically on continuing to either balance your life or continue to be a good person, even though you're going through those extremely difficult and hard times while building a business?
It's not easy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are some times where I've been a little moody, where because I was having a terrible business day, or my numbers weren't where they should be, and I knew there was something I had to fix that I couldn't figure out. And I know that there's been some times where I've been a little bit moody. So I guess the honest answer is you don't ever, I mean, a good person, I certainly think I'm a good person, but I don't ever completely disconnect from what's going on in my business with my personal life. I don't have that skill. Maybe some people do. Mm-hmm. That's just a reality of, I think, a lot of entrepreneurs. I speak to, you know, a lot of guys who do this in my hometown. I remember sitting down for a beer with a very big property developer in my city, and he'd been enormously successful. And he told me he had not had a nice barbecue gathering for like 20 years, where he was able to just mingle with the other people on the same level, just completely relaxed.
Wow.
not thinking about his business. I mean, the fact is, if you're going to be bringing a business to a certain level, you have to be a little bit obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And it has to become you. You are the business. The business is you. And that obsession is part of, I think, what makes you successful. You care more about it than almost anything else. And that's part of the recipe to success. But there's a bit of a price to pay for that as well.
Yeah. And that's something that, like, I continually going through. This past weekend we went to Bulgaria, and of course I'm thinking about my business, but like I had to put all the apps on my phone that are pertaining to business, and I had to hide them all on my phone so I wasn't tempted to bring them up and look, we were having our weekend. And it's like, okay, I'm having this stress, but how can I make sure that I'm still being a good family member, a son, a good friend? I'm still enjoying this moment. And it's a juggling act, man. It's not easy. Sure. Friday night, you know, you have friends over for dinner, but at the same time, you're worried about, you know, revenue for the month. And
I understand you. I understand perfectly where you're coming from. And I have not figured out that skill yet.
Yeah.
Where you can compartmentalize your business and your personal life and completely separate them. Like, yeah. I so understand you. I went on a cruise, on a nice family cruise. My niece and nephew were there. They're kind of the reason we did this. And my parents were there. My girlfriend was there as well. And my brother. And it was so great to be around the family. It had been so long since I'd been around my family. This was a special time. It was a 1-week cruise. But I guess I'd made the mistake of having a little bit of access to Wi-Fi, like you buy these packages on cruises, and you can check your emails. And checking your email is like the kind of the toll of death, because you know, like, if something, usually there's an email and there's something you have to fix right away. And I remember that particular week there were a couple of disasters, and I remember it taking away from my enjoyment of that week of the cruise, because I couldn't completely shut it out of my brain.
Yeah.
Maybe some people have that skill, but I remember thinking, well, it's okay because it's part of the suffering that I'm going through now to one day, you know, hopefully sell the business and sort of be in a nice, comfortable position where I don't have to worry about this anymore. So that's kind of like, I see it as the stage that you have to go through now for an eventual payoff.
Yeah, it's tricky.
I hope it doesn't all sound too negative, because really I absolutely love running a business, and I feel that I've been going on a negative tangent here for the last like 20 minutes.
No, I don't think I, you know, if anything, I've been guiding you down that way, because I think it's something that entrepreneurs should probably talk about more. But at the same time, you know, it's, and that's one of the reasons I do this podcast, is to get people to open up, and if we're more vulnerable about this type of experience, then other entrepreneurs are going to be like, oh yeah, I'm there too. And it's really going to help them along the way. I think really, in the grand scheme of things, we're really addicted to some form of personal growth. And that's why we continue to put ourselves through these really challenging times, because I don't think we could really feel alive on some aspect if we were just doing a regular 9-to-5 over and over.
That's well said. Very well said.
Yeah. And I think it's part of just, I guess you could say it's part of our life purpose or destiny or however you want to phrase it, but it's part of who we are. So how long have you been in Chiang Mai?
I've been here off and on for about 3 years. Okay. I was living here part-time kind of the last 3 years and did a lot of traveling. I'd say I was here about half of the year, and now I've bought a condo here, and you know, this is really where my life is based, and this is my home.
Why did you pick Chiang Mai?
I'd have to say the number one reason is the community. To give you an example of my mindset, when I was home back home in Canada working on my own, and I was going to, you know, Starbucks coffee shops and this kind of place and doing my own thing, I would tell people about my business, and their reaction was like, well, you can actually make money doing that? Are you actually doing that full time? Like, sounds kind of ridiculous, like selling hammocks online. No way that could be a full-time job. So that's the typical reaction I'd get. And when I got to Chiang Mai, the shift was instantaneous. Like, when I tell people that I sold hammocks online, the immediate reaction was, wow, hey, that's really unique. How cool is that? How did you think about that idea? Oh, geez, I wish I would have thought of that. So there's a completely different mindset. There's an entrepreneurial mindset here that I really enjoy.
When you first arrived at Chiang Mai, did you have contacts, or did you go in kind of straight cold with not knowing anybody?
Totally cold turkey.
How did you meet and connect with people?
I was aware of some online groups. One of the reasons I picked Chiang Mai is because I had done some online research before, and there were some entrepreneur networks online, you know, where some exchanges were going on. So I knew that there was a scene here, and that's the way I connected. Like, first I landed here in a you know, what I thought was a very strange Thai neighborhood. I'd never been to Thailand before, and it was all kind of new and very exciting. But you know, pretty much immediately that first week, I reached out through that Facebook group, and I asked if, you know, anybody would wanted to meet for coffee and give me a briefing on Chiang Mai and how things work and everything. And that's how I started making contacts.
Do you feel that people were pretty warm and receptive to having, you know, you come to town and show you around and introduce themselves to you?
Yeah, there was a couple of guys that I met that way. One right away is a blogger that's told me how everything worked. He told me about meetups, and you know, it's really through the meetups, I think, like the in-person meetups, that I started meeting more people. And back at that time, there was a co-working space as well called the Coffee Monster, which was sort of a hub for the entrepreneurial community. Well, there's a couple of hubs, but it was one of the hubs, and I met a lot of people through just going there every day to work as well.
Very cool. Okay, man, that's all I got. You got anything else?
No, that's it, man. Okay. Unless there's more specific questions, that's good.
I think we did a great podcast. If the listeners want to reach out or learn more about Hammock Universe, where's the best place they can do that at?
Oh, they just through the website. So hammockuniverse.com is our URL.
Cool and cool. And if you're in Chiang Mai, maybe hit up Philip. Philip and I always used to see each other at this little Mexican, which is kind of ironic. There's a little Mexican food stand in Chiang Mai that's absolutely delicious on Neiman Road. And you and I used to, I remember we'd cross paths there and have a burrito every now and then.
Yeah, fantastic place. There's a couple of good Mexican spots in Chiang Mai now. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so if you go to Chiang Mai, check out the Mexican food.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
And listeners, thank you guys for tuning in once again. We're going to wrap up there, and we'll see you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody.
The Entrepreneur House is a business accelerator for established entrepreneurs. Imagine spending an extended period of time with other successful entrepreneurs working together and growing your business. Day to day, you interact with other driven and smart business people. Spending an extended period of time around them alters your business and your mentality around business. Goals are set, business grows, new partnerships develop, greater profit margins are achieved, the productivity skyrockets for the attendees, and you'll get to have an incredible adventure while doing it. This year, our main event will be held in Chiang Mai, Thailand. It is 4 weeks from October 26th to November 24th, 2017. It will be full of workshops, masterminds, and co-working spaces. Be sure to check out the details at theentrepreneurhouse.com as soon as possible. For those of you that are interested and have some questions, don't hesitate to contact us, theentrepreneurhouse.com. We will respond as soon as we can. For now, saludos from somewhere in the world.